Mud Podcast presents.
This is Mindful Mud. I am your host, Flavina Nikli, and I'm a Zen teacher, mindfulness instructor. And big thanks to K-Mud for hosting us, Redwood Community Radio. And I just want to dive in because I'm really, really excited about what's to come here. My fabulous guest is Suzanne Tucker. She's from Generation Mindful. And I just give you a quick intro. Suzanne Tucker has been a physical therapist, parent educator, and certified educator of infant massage for over 25 years. She's a mom of four and the founder of Generation Mindful, an international community bringing mindful, positive child-rearing practices into the mainstream for young families and early childhood classrooms. Welcome, Suzanne. Super, super honored to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's my honor.
Yeah, let's dive right in. What got you to creating this amazing company, Generation Mindful, this amazing community?
Thank you. Oh my goodness. What a great question. I believe it was my own journey and all of the stops on the way to my own conscious parenting that led me to form Generation Mindful. I've been a therapist and an educator committed to secure attachment is how I would summarize it, which I believe flows supernaturally through our mindful present relationships. And I struggled with that, as we all do. I'm the fifth of seven children. And I was raised here in the Midwest in a home with a lot of love. And somewhere along the way, I internalized, as I think many of us have, if I do good, I am good. And if I do bad, I am bad. And so that's a very disempowering mindset for a little person to pick up. My life and my mindfulness journey really accelerated when I went to college, was studying the body, physical therapy. And my own personal journey with learning to heal the past, be present, and then to raise a family was full of struggles and also lots of joy. And I think it was my classes. So every Friday, my greatest joy was sitting on a circle on the floor with parents of day-old, week-old babies. And it was really that class where I realized I am not alone in this idea that I'm not enough. And I'm not alone in the struggle to mainstream what I know up here and to really embody the learning. And so Generation Mindful really came in 2016 out of that embodied awareness that we all deserve training wheels, I would call them, to embody a new way of being intergenerationally. I think we're at a really special time in the conscious evolution of family. And I found myself seeing it again and again and again, beautiful souls that did not know how fabulous they were on their journey, their parenting journey. And a lot of guilt and shame was running the course. So Generation Mindful was born to take the science of the connection and play and learning and really embodying mindfulness practices into everyday life for the busy family, and even in the pre-K classroom on up. And that's really how it came to be. We launched on Kickstarter, and it was fabulous because we struck a chord. I think I met you there very early on. Yeah. You became part of our family.
Yeah. So it's funny because you said 2016, you know, and I was already teaching mindfulness at the schools, and I already, you know, my kiddo by then was about nine. Yeah, pretty fortunate here. You know, it was about nine and I saw your playfulness, how you, like all the resources you were sharing and just the way, again, your playfulness, but also really founded in research, and you really knew what you were doing, but in such like, again, in this playful way. And so that's really why I was like, oh yeah, okay, I can learn a lot here and, you know, open up a little bit and come from the really, how do you say that, more serious aspect. And because we all learn so much better when we have joy, when we have laughter, when we're allowed to make mistakes. And I've also taught mindfulness parenting classes. So it just all fit right in. And I got some of your tools, you know, the really fun cards and posters and stickers. And my 9-year-old was first a little bit like, really? I'm kind of too old for this. But then he totally got into it. And so, you know, we kind of adjusted it to the age and played around with it. And now I actually know local classrooms who are using some of your, you know, diamond toolkits.
Thank you for shining a light on play, because play is, we have 6 tenets. Play to learn is at the very top. So if you look at the Gen M logo, it's made of 6 circles and they're the rainbow. So it's play, teach, be, live, hold, nurture. And the play is play to learn. And the teach is teach by example. And the be is being enough. So play, teach, be. Live is living with our heart higher than our head, which is really the yogi way. I just picture myself in a big downward dog just all day long walking around, heart higher than head, you know, and not be so logical all the time. So play, teach, be, live, hold heart higher than head, and nurturing the human spirit. So that's Gen M. Not a lot of time for the guilt and the shame, just enough to notice it and name it. And we believe in the name it, feel it, heal it model, because it's the brain science of emotional regulation boiled down to something that I love to play and introduce even in a preschool classroom. So I don't know about the listeners out there, but sometimes my favorite thing is to see a really hard concept explained to children. I just love it. I don't know if you've seen like Kid President or other phenomenons. There's science, there's news, there's spirituality. For me, it lives because I love the simple. I think simple is powerful. And so that's Gen M. When we're talking about play as learning and mindfulness practice and raising a conscious, emotionally healthy world, we're talking about emotional learning, social or soft skill learning, and we're talking about making it fun and simple and everyday. So that really is Gen M.
Right. Thank you. Oh, that's such a wonderful way of describing. There's so much in there. I mean, and the way, I mean, one of the big things that you're bringing out in Gen M and create that play around it is dealing with emotions, right?
Correct.
Now you created these plushies, these really cool animals. They are just the bomb.
Snuggle Buddies, emotion plush. And we could talk a little bit about the science behind them, but they really are about the name it, feel it, heal it. And they have all 4 mood emojis, happy, sad, calm, and mad, scared, in their back pocket. There's 8 of them. And the idea there is, who doesn't have like a lovey, right? An attachment. And when they're 2 and 3, the idea there is at bedtime for us to strengthen the muscle called thinking about our day. When did I feel happy? It's like a gratitude practice, really. When did I feel sad? It's a self-awareness practice. When did I feel calm? I might think never until this moment right now. And I can't tell you how many times when I play this game with my twins, who were literally 2 at the time where I developed it, I would be like, oh, right now is my calm. Right now, you snuggled, reading the stories and talking. This is my calm. And then I modeled every day, where was my scared, angry? And I cannot tell you how profound we can change the world and create a peaceful, empathetic, compassionate world if and when we mainstream this practice as a daily practice. This amount of introspection and self-awareness, and we can tease it out even further into what's happening in the brain chemistry in terms of dealing with trauma and ACE, adverse child experiences, whatnot. We can go in heavy, but just at a real surface level, I want to really encourage families embodying this practice of sharing about your day and pairing the memory to an emotion is literally doing push-ups and sit-ups to the most vulnerable part of the brain to stress. It's called the hippocampus. And when you do this beautiful, simple, even I would say fun practice, you are pumping that little hippocampus up for resilience, for emotional regulation, for all those goodies that we're looking for from ourselves, from our kids when life's really hard. Well, that's the wrong time to look for that skill or to think that we're going to groom it. It's the wrong time. It's like we can't go climb a mountain when we haven't done the training for the shift in the oxygen and the shift in the, you know, the load on our muscles. So that is just, thank you for bringing up snuggle buddies. It's probably one of my favorite things to introduce because it's so, so simple and profound.
So you're saying that, you know, let's say you have a snuggle buddy and they're a whole bunch from the hummingbird to the whale to the, right. They are super cute. Right. So anyway.
They have a little theme, but you know, they each have a little personality and they all carry the same emotions.
Right.
And I love that, right? They're not like one is grumpy all the time, one's happy all the time. No, it's not like the Care Bears. I have a real issue with that. Mm-hmm. It really pigeonholes children to think they're a certain way, right, of being. And the truth is we all have the potential for all of these feelings within us all the time, every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And we go through it, right? I mean, it's one of those things that are so cool to like go like, oh, so how many emotions have you already gone through today?
Right.
Sometimes we feel
just start with those four guys. I'm going to tell you, when we came up with this chart, the happy, sad, calm, mad, scared, based on Yale's science on emotions, right. They dive deep. So we just took it and made it fun, simple. When we launched this, I took it on as the daily practice to dive in and notice every morning, midday, and night, where was I? So simple. I mean, this is what we're inviting you to do with your three-year-old. So I thought, so basic. I'm telling you what, it rocked my world. What I noticed about myself, I've lived for decades. I've done mindfulness practice since my 20s. I had never noticed how orange I was, how often I was high energy, and I wouldn't say happy, and I wouldn't say angry or scared, right? So happy is yellow, angry, scared is red. I was in the middle. And just having that awareness, I was able to breathe and tip into the yellow, into the happy, and even pull down into the calm. But that was something, honestly, that was not available to me, accessible to me, without that awareness of where do I even live? Where do I just show up?
It's so amazing because you bring, you know, you bring cards, you bring posters, you bring snuggle buddies out. And so then the kids have really something to hold on to and to see, and us adults too. And it makes it so much easier. You know, we talk a lot about, we know a lot about what would be good, what is the right way to do things. But if we don't practice it, it won't work.
And so true. Talking about head, you're talking about heart over head,
right.
Because knowledge isn't power. And everyone says knowledge is power. Embodied knowledge is wisdom, and wisdom brings strength, right? So that power that we talk about, knowledge is power. Well, yeah, when that knowledge is embodied, it becomes wisdom, and that is powerful, right? So that's really what we're doing, is moving beyond concept. And when we're stressed out, is it a really great time to have a philosophical, you know, discussion? No, we're stressed out. We can't access even the speaking, thinking parts of our brains. We're stressed out. Have you ever noticed that? Like, you have difficulty with basic functions when you're stressed. And children, we say, oh, use your words. There are no words in the part of the brain that is fight, flight, or freezing, right? So Generation Mindful is based on this brain science that says, hey, guess what? When you can see it, feel it, touch it, interact with it without needing to read or even speak, it is powerful and it is regulating. And that's why these snuggle buddies, like, we have children who've experienced the death of a parent who could not put words to their experience. And the adults around them were so worried because they could not speak to it. And they introduced this one little girl, they introduced the yellow lion, the snuggle buddy. And the first time she was able to connect with her loved one on her loss, she used no words. She used her snuggle buddy and she grabbed onto the sad, to the teardrop, the blue, and she held it and looked at her loved one And they shared that moment of, I am sad, with no words.
Right.
Right. And that was the portal to that discussion. So I just,
it's so profound.
In the tangible, you've hit on so many of my favorite talks already. Play is learning. And that we deserve tangible. You deserve tangible. I deserve tangible. I know all this stuff. I love reading about it. And I can't do it often. I can't access the daily playful ritual without my training wheels.
It's so beautiful. You know, when you just going back to that really easy thing we could do in the evening, so often what we really need with the kids for learning and is connection, right? That's that part of connection. And so it kind of incorporates all of it in that evening routine. First of all, it's the calming down, right? To go to bed, because we all know how hard it is sometimes to get little kids to bed.
Transitions, right? Always hard, especially end of night, right? For sure.
And everybody's tired and exhausted, and you know, the emotional intelligence might not be top notch right then. So, but then we do that and modeling it with, so it gives us as parents a moment too to breathe and say, yes. Oh, that's when I was happy today. That's when I was calm today. And how cool is that? And just that connection with the kid, and we can share and they can share. And I just envisioned this so beautiful. So that's already a great idea, right? In the evening, connecting and just sharing and modeling that emotional intelligence, really. That's what we're doing here. Yeah. And you mentioned the science-based. I know, I think you're a Dan Siegel fan as well, right?
Absolutely. Huge fan.
Huge fan. Me too.
He wrote a review. He's in my book. My children's book is Heart's Treasure Hunt. And he helped us launch it. He was so kind. He loved it. And he gave us a great review. And we put it in the book.
That is so cool.
He's fabulous. I had been at Esalen in California and met him. I went to a mindfulness retreat with him at Esalen. And it was before I launched the book. And I felt like that time with him was pivotal in my writing. In fact, I didn't go up. Everyone was like, did you go tell Dan what you do and who you are? I said, no, but I did go up and hold his hands. And I said, would you do the metta meditation with me? And I held the Gen M community in my heart. And we did that metta meditation together. And I really do attribute that to much of the success of the launch of Heart's Treasure Hunt.
Tell me more about the book.
Heart's Treasure Hunt is a journey where our little guy, Heart, wants to know, what is love and where does love live? So Heart is on a journey, very curious. I don't know about you, but I was super curious kid. And I think I needed validation that it was okay to ask big questions and that there were no silly answers and that mistakes help me learn and grow. All of those concepts are core to Generation Mindful because I think they were stopping points for me along my journey that I didn't really get that growth mindset early on that I could ask. I could ask those big things. And when I told you about as a little person that I thought if I did good, I am good. And if I did bad, I am bad. So that stopped me on my journey because there wasn't a lot of personal power in wanting to be a good girl and do what other people want. And that kind of cooperative people pleaser nature, I think, is groomed by that misunderstanding for children. So in this book, Heart goes on a journey and wants to know, what is love and where does it live? And so Heart wants to know, is it my actions? Is it my words? Is it something, you know, I earn? And then Heart meets all the snuggle buddies along the way. You know, Heart asks, is love in my happy? Is love in my sad? Is love in my body when I'm calm, when I'm mad? And what Heart learns is, yes, it is.
Sure.
And the very last page is my favorite. It gets up to this really suspenseful moment where it says, love must be hiding inside of this book behind the last page. let's have a look. And there's all this suspense where little heart is winking and we're about to turn the page. And I don't know about you, but I used to have this book with Grover, and it was about, don't turn the page, there's a monster at the end of the book. And I remember the joy, my whole body would be lit up and I was like, no, mom, don't turn the page. So that was kind of what I was channeling there with the, oh my gosh, we're going to find out where love lives on the next page. So you turn the page and there's a mirror and all your peacemaker friends are looking out at you. And it says, you are love. Yes, it's true. Love, love, love. Love is you.
Oh my goodness. I have chills all over. And listeners, I tell you, the pictures are so beautiful of this book. I just saw some of it. Just want to let you know. And then there's mirror when you look at yourself and you feel like, I'm love. That's amazing.
Love is you.
And again,
so
it's this.
My little Susanna inner child just goes, I am love all the time, right? Like not that I have to earn it. Like it's my birthright. I am love. I think that is a radical shift in understanding confusing behaviors from children. If we can embrace you are love. So please join me in affirming that in yourself, your little child, and with your children today. Instead of just, I love you as a verb, because they can misunderstand that. I did. I thought, oh, you love me because I was good girl. It's, I love you. And guess what? You're love all the time. I see the love you are. I see you.
Wow. Yes. That, it's so empowering, right? This is really what it is. It's like, oh, we are love. Also, if we're really sad or we really have a hard day. And I would say for parents, it's the same thing. I think for us parents, kids are very easy to learn that actually they get it real fast because they're not so conditioned yet, right?
Correct.
But for us parents, I mean, as you said in the very beginning, you know, When we share as parents, there's so much guilt, so much shame of like, I'm basically screwing up all day long and I must be the only one. And it's not true, right? We both know that. It's
like, well, I want to tell everyone out there, first of all, that one thing that truly helped me, and it took me about 5 years of motherhood to get this, which is 2 children out of 4, you know, and 5 years as mom. One, I want you to look at the goals you're setting for yourself. I believe that we're driving a large part of our stress, anxiety, and not enoughness based on the goals we set. So we tend to set the goals too high or just out of reach. And then no matter how great we are and how successful a day goes, if we don't reach it, we failed. We're not enough. And so we really weren't taught about conscious goal setting as children, nor were we taught to cancel unmet goals and reset them. So in the Generation Mindful community, this technology of self-love, self-compassion, and I believe mindful living, we teach in our positive parenting course, and it allows parents to show up literally after day one of this course, like, I am a freaking rock star. And that is literally where I want people to go. It's like, whoa, 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 wait a minute here. Like I have just been beating myself up and dragging myself around. And how do I expect to heal, learn, and grow if that's how I'm treating my present day self?
It's such a good point. And research shows, right, that if we actually feel, if we take care of ourselves, if we feel that self-compassion, we're more likely to succeed with what we like to accomplish.
We are. And we are successful in our parenting, which how are we going to gauge success? Because we're not talking about perfect. We're talking about love, truly. And so love can be, I'm yelling at my child and I notice I'm yelling at my child. So in our community, we would be like, boom, I rock. Like, I'm amazing. Why am I amazing? because I noticed, and we're not celebrating. Like, we really aren't celebrating the little moments. And a lot of Generation Mindful is mistakes help me learn and grow. And the power of non-judgment and being with what is, all mindfulness, right? But it's super simple and applied to everyday life. And that's exactly what I mean. So that might sound silly, but I want you to understand the brain chemistry of what we just shared.
Yes, when go for it.
Right. When I'm able to notice that I'm yelling and have a moment of awareness and celebrate it, as opposed to beat myself up, I am now releasing dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, all the things that literally when I go, boom, I rock, I can feel my face smile. I am feeling good hormones just in remembering this with you. And I'm not even having this experience right now, right? But my body, we can literally hack our brains that way. And when we do that, our body says, what's going on right now? I want more of this. I'm wanting to learn this and grow this. That's dopamine. I want to learn and remember this moment. I want to do it again. That's dopamine. So if you want to have more of those affirmative, positive reinforcements in your life, what I would ask you to do is just break it down. Where's the hardest moment, and what keeps happening? You know, we all know what it is. It's getting out of the door in the morning, or it's bath time, or there's something going on and it keeps happening. For some parents, it's my kid wants to eat at bedtime and I struggle because I want to hold the boundary. I want them to eat at dinner, but I feel so mean, like I'm starving them. You know, we all know what it is. It keeps happening day after day. So what I would invite you to do is to bring the awarenesses and the practices that we're talking about and really make it live for you, make it really tangible and real in your life. Take on one thing, one opportunity. I wouldn't even call it a challenge, one opportunity, and see if as you're listening to our interview, you can apply something, maybe a number of things that we're sharing about, and see if you can, what we call transform it, right? So it will shift, it will change, it will evolve. It won't be perfect, but you'll notice there's some movement. And when you celebrate that movement, it keeps happening. And that, for me, that is the only way we stand a chance at healing generational traumas and generational cycles.
In the very moment, right?
Moments. It's the practice.
Right.
We can't take on the big bites. You know, remember I talked about the goal setting? It's the little bites. Little bites. They say, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. I don't know how to make that up, but I just love it. It's just so great, right? Okay, I'm eating an elephant. How am I going to do it? One bite at a time.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I love it. Okay, I have something, right? It's that question of like, okay, I'm just yelling to my kid. We all do that. I don't know any parent who has not done that. It's sometimes these kiddos just get us going. It's probably what gets us going the most, right? Because we love them so much. So those triggers, we all have them and we all react. So you're saying that is not really the problem, right? So
I'm saying it's the opportunity.
Honestly.
Right. Triggers are a gift. I really want to reframe. We do so much reframing in our community, and it's a powerful way to empower yourself to heal, learn, and grow. Reframing is a gift, right? It really is. It begins with our thoughts, become our words, become our actions. So reframing helps us get set with our mindset around something. So talking about a trigger, it's such an area of shame and guilt for parents, I would say for human beings, any human being. If you're getting to a triggered state, there is, it's energy in you that's vibrating. For me, it's wanting to heal. It's like, ooh, 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 me. I go way back right here. So I always say, like, parenting is the best therapy you never knew you were getting.
Yes.
Right. And these little moments, I'm a visual learner. If you haven't noticed already, I love the visual. I need the visual. I need the tangible. In the moment of the trigger, I like to imagine a golden, literal 24-karat gold tethered cord going deep in me to a place that wants to heal. So when I am triggered, I think, I am triggered, that means I'm empowered to heal, learn, and grow. And instead of being a victim or it's happening to me, I am there and I am powerful and I have choice. I have my words. I have my actions. And so I want to name it, feel it, heal it. So we have a 7-step trigger process, 7-step trigger worksheet we introduce for free on our community. If you go to our resource page, it's there. We have a webinar and a printable free, 1000% free. If you join our community, we will email it to you. If you're like, I don't know where to go. If you're on our list, you're going to get it right in your inbox. And if you take our course, you're going to get it, because I believe healing through awareness of our trigger moments is the way. So triggers aren't a bad thing. They're a learning moment. And I would say the same with misbehavior, what we call unwanted behavior. It's really not even miss, right? Because that's such a judgment. It's just challenging or unwanted in that moment, right? That kid might be doing the best thing to communicate the need. So how can we call that a misbehavior if it's literally them like drowning and their arms are flailing in the ocean and they're seeking help so they don't drown? That could be the confusing behavior that we're seeing at school or at home, that we just don't have the eyes to see the whole picture at that moment right. For our child. We're a part of it. We're triggered too.
Right.
If we just breathe and say, okay, this is a hard moment. This is a challenge. This is unwanted, rather than misbehavior.
That is so important. That, again, it's the reframing that just really literally can change anything. I see that with clients that, you know, I support.
Like, we're talking about how is parental guilt and shame a universal experience in our experiences, in our work, and specifically in my work as a parent educator. Typically, it's a feeling of not enoughness that triggers a feeling of guilt or shame. It would be, I've let my child down, or I'm not good enough because I failed to meet this goal that I have. Let's say I want to work, but I also want to be at my child's play. So we're in life, we're busy humans, and we have choices. And instead of feeling empowered to make the choice, we set the bar of like, I'm super mom. I believe in reparenting the self. I think every one of us, I wouldn't say the word need, but deserves to reparent ourselves. Whether we all objectively feel like we need therapy, the truth is every one of us has been conditioned to believe certain things. And when we become adults, we have the opportunity to choose and to reflect and to watch and look and see, what conditioning did I receive? What belief systems do I have? Where are they serving me and where are they not? I want to get to the heart of your question though, because when you ask about parental guilt and shame and you notice that your mother was not run by this, I'd like to present, if I could, a model that might help in parenting. There are thought to be really 4 buckets that we fall into. So there is the authoritative, and we'll start
again?
With authoritarians. Authoritarians are top down, do what I want, and then I'll love you more. And they're very strict and hard, and there's not a lot of unconditional love happening. And you can often feel as a child that you'll never, ever reach that bar. They tend to breed a lot of disconnection and even lying and distruth from the child, because the child learns to be safe. I want to give you what you want or need, but I actually can't. So I need to learn to manipulate and lie and be cunning. And I still want you to accept me because I am wired for connection, yet I'm not connected to you. I'm not being fed emotionally and spiritually through our relationship. So they can seek to have those things fed other places. It leads to insecure attachment and other things. So that is one model. Now, those parents may not be run by guilt or shame. They may not be having a high amount of self-awareness. On the flip side, you have, I would say, up in the other corner. So authoritative, they are a lot of power and not necessarily very respectful. So on the flip side, you have permissive parents. Permissive parents tend to be high respect, very respect, but not very predictable in their parenting. And they often are lacking the consistency or the boundaries that children really do thrive on. Okay. So can you see how kind of they're like opposite ends of the spectrum? So permissive parent might experience more guilt or shame because they tend to do what I call 0 to 100. They're like, I'm going to be so patient. And then they try that and then they blow up and they lose it. And then they yell and then they're not in the middle. They're seeking to be in the middle, but they're really either 0 or 100. They're extremes. And they're very upset when disappointed in themselves. So they judge themselves a lot. They want to do different than what's done to them. And I think a majority of the mindful, positive parenting community start here. They learn about consciousness, conscious development. They learn about emotions. They have awareness. They learn how they were raised. They reflect on their childhood. They want to do, quote, better, different. And so they struggle. They struggle to actually allow themselves to be human and have human emotion and be okay with, I feel so mad right now. I want, and I am going to go sit down and take a minute for me, right? So the guilt and the shame, I think, is really high in this quadrant, okay? Now, there's two other quadrants. One then is the authoritative, so not authoritarian, but authoritative. Authoritative parenting has authority, they do set boundaries, and they are respectful. This is what we strive for in the mindful, conscious, gentle parenting world, what I call positive parenting. It's aligned with the brain science. We have boundaries, we use them, we set them, and we really do look for guilt and shame only to move past it. We don't want to be run in the moment by our guilt or shame. And then the fourth is this mixed bag approach, which is very inconsistent, kind of all over the place, or the checked out parent who's not even really on the playing field. They're just not present. They're not there. They're not on the field. So those are kind of the continuum of the four types of parenting. And that is through decades and decades of research. Those are not my delineations.
It's like this question of like, how much boundary is helpful? Because first of all, it's really hard to follow through on boundaries. It's the harder way to go in a way. Can be like, it takes some showing up to do it, right? As a parent. However, it's, as you said, Suzanne, it is such an important part of parenting. It gives that secure attachment, right? Do you want to speak a little more about how can we? Okay, let's just go into an example, for instance. One of the things that I think for us parents at our generation a little bit, a big issue is tech use for kids, right?
Yes.
Even for younger kids, but also teenagers. And putting boundaries down, let's say, can you give an example how that could look like or what would be healthy?
So excited to talk about this. First of all, boundaries, we spent an hour on. The first hour of our course is on self-awareness. Guess what the second topic is? Boundaries. It's session two. It's an hour. Boundaries are so misunderstood. And I think there is a difference between punishment and consequence. And consistency is the goal. Boundaries are clear, firm, consistent, and respectful. You could write those words down. Clear, firm, consistent, respectful, and predictable. So when you know you're not using a consequence for a boundary, but you're using just pulling out of the air punishment, is when you're making it up on the spot. You're like, well, do that or else no ice cream all week. And you're like a punishment. And so I want to really tease this out because we think, okay, we don't want to raise, I've heard this said, we don't want to raise a snowflake. We don't want to raise an entitled brat. That is the fear, right? We're going to raise an entitled brat. So we have to be strong and hard because they're going to live in a hard world. Actually false. Those are not the goals. Okay. I love the idea of being clear, firm, and consistent, but I'm not down with, I got to be hard and rough because I'm sending my kid out into a hard, rough world. False. You can actually raise a self-aware, emotionally intelligent, empathetic, compassionate, child, and they're going to be a rock star in the world because they're not only going to be of the world, but they can change the world and they're going to be the future. So I really want to challenge that mindset that we got to be rough because we're just going to raise a bunch of entitled brats. False. That is not what the research shows. Now, how do we raise resilient, compassionate, empathetic kids? Okay, back to that example where they're doing the thing and you're not loving it and you want to just take away ice cream for this because I'm going to teach you. Well, that's a punishment. And the thing about punishment is that we have found that they're ineffective for the long-term goal of what? Learning. We got to remember what we're wanting in the moment isn't just to get our way or be the top dog. It's to have a child that's learning in the moment and that can deal with conflict and deal with disappointment, right? That can be emotionally intelligent. So a clear, firm boundary is the way to go. So generally, if you can set these up in advance and involve the child, things like tech are not so difficult. So if you're in the moment of crisis, it is not your point of power to be taking this on. You know, this isn't the first time you've had this challenge. Let's say stopping the video game in order to come to dinner. It's a very common one. Why do we think that our point of power is in the moment where I'm already triggered, I made dinner, my kid's doing the video game? Not our point of power. I would challenge you in that moment, if you want to help them transition, I'm going to give you a couple things that'll help. And then I'm going to give you really the secret sauce is to take this on with your child at dinner when you're talking about tomorrow night. Okay. You want to do it not in the moment of crisis. Now, if you are in the moment where you want to transition off tech and come to dinner, I found the way to do it is connection. So we call it connect before I correct. So instead of barking, who wants to be yelled at, told what to do, and overpowered? No human in the world wants to feel not safe, not seen, and not powerful. We all want to feel safe, seen, and a sense of belonging. So if you go over to the TV and you say just this, just be curious first. What are you playing? Pause. They answer. They're like, wait, mom's actually curious? She's caring. I'm having a moment to show what this looks like. You're having the best time. Tell me about it. Well, yeah, da, 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 da. Okay, great. We just put dinner on. So we're turning this off and then you can involve them. When does this get to the end? Is this like, can you just pause it? Or is this like you die? And then it's, you know, you're involving them. There's a little bit of respect here and then you transition. So it's a little bit different than it's now, I said so, drop it. But can you see where we're teaching really important conflict resolution and negotiation skills, the kind that we would like used on us the next time our child wants us to hurry so we can drive them to gymnastics? Do we want to be yelled at and barked at? Mom, drop it right now. Come on, it's time. Get in the car. No, we don't love that. So this is really our chance to model the kind of things that we want our children to embody.
Such a good example. Yeah, that whole like connect and show respect and know that you actually, the thing is this, we as parents, we care so much about the kids and we're sometimes not very intelligent how we do that.
Like, girl, can I speak to that though?
Yes, please.
I think we are a very special place as a society. Our generation is really the first generation to have all this brain science really mainstreaming. So we really are ripe for a lot of confusion because just because you know or read something or heard it on a podcast doesn't make it easy to do. Okay. It's a practice. I love yoga as a practice, as an example. So did you know that yoga, you know, bending your body, it's not about being flexible. Like the yogis don't even care if you could touch your toes. Getting on the mat is about a practice of mindfulness, about self-awareness, the breath, attention to self, attention to others, being curious. All the spiritual practices are being practiced, strengthened. And then what happens is you can take the yoga off the mat. So my favorite form of yoga is yoga off the mat. It's like life's coming at me like a hot fireball. And how am I going to be in this moment? Can I love myself? Can I have a boundary? Can I open my throat and say no to the world if I want to say no? So I really, whether you do yoga or not really isn't the point. It's the idea that it's a practice. And you better believe on those days where I am working my practice that I have an easier time using those muscles when life is hard and things are coming at me. Same thing with conscious parenting. It's probably our most important facet of our life, our children, our families, the people we love. And yet, if I were to ask the average American, how much time a week do you spend cultivating and nurturing your mindful, positive parenting practices? Probably not a lot. And now if I asked you, how much time do you spend on your physical health? Probably an average of 1.5 to 3 hours walking, exercising. How much time do you spend on eating well? Well, you go get those recipes, you go to the grocery store, lots of time. You're preparing the meal, you're serving it. So this is the thing. Our generation gets to realize that this is a practice for us because likely no one modeled these things. In an ideal world, we learn and grow these muscles through relationships and they're modeled for us and it becomes our inner dialogue and our mindset. I just believe, and that's where Generation Mindful comes in, I believe it's like a reset and we deserve those training wheels and tools and support to reset the way that children are being raised. And my hope is that I work myself out of a job in a couple generations. We'll always want to have community, always, but we won't need to be retraining so many hearts and heads because we will have had more modeling going on.
I mean, it makes me so hopeful. Like, we can literally heal intergenerational traumas because we're starting to have a glimpse, at least, of how the nervous system works, right? And from a science perspective, what practices are helpful? How are we actually receiving what we're yearning for? With what behavior? With what communication skills? Which is really fascinating. And yes, it does take practice, right? It's not just reading about it. And however, these practices, in the beginning, it might be a little awkward. And perhaps even the kids are like, what are you doing? Like, however, I mean, the results are so easily seen, right? And sometimes, at least that's what I have noticed. You know, as you said, it's like parenting is one of those therapies that we might have not wished for, but it is the best one. And I call it also for my spiritual path, you know, I call it awakening with parenting. You really, you know, that way of like, I have meditated 15 years before I even had a kid. And then when I had my little baby, I was like, oh my God, the real practice is starting. Like,
absolutely. One of my favorite lines about that is being a parent makes life a parent. It really is like jumping on the super highway to personal growth and self-awareness. You can get on that highway, lots of on-ramps. It's just having a baby is a pretty sure fast track to that super highway.
Good one, yeah. And so, you know, it has to do simultaneously with our own awareness, right? As you said, like, oh, I'm yelling. What is happening? Or I'm having these same moments where it's really, really hard. What is the little stuff that I can shift in those moments? And when you're saying, you know, don't try to fix it in the hot moments. It's really not going to work. So go for it. I know you want to say something.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So this brings me to my definition of what is mindfulness. My living definition for mindfulness, for my personal practice, for myself, my life, is present to the moment with joy and ease, with a heavy lean in to that joy and ease. Because for so long, I operated out of present to the moment, period. Like, I thought that was mindfulness practice, was present to the moment. Wow. when I brought in a real focus of awareness on my personal joy and ease, it led me to notice my not joy and my dis-ease. So that's the practice. It's noticing. It's noticing, guys. It's not being, you know, the yogi sitting crisscross on top of a mountain in a quiet place and nothing's happening. Okay?
No.
It's not. It's so much messier.
Especially as parents.
Right? Oh my gosh, right? As parents. So like permission for messy, permission for chaos.
Permission for non-perfection.
For non-perfection, permission for flow is how I like to think of that as flow. And so Dan Siegel would talk about two banks on the river. One is super chaotic and one is super rigid. And the practice is of really just noticing within a day, where am I? And with non-judgment and self-compassion, that alone will change your life because noticing is that's your point of power, is that awareness. We can't have any power without first awareness. So the pause, the notice, and then the pause and the being curious is everything. It all begins there. So, and then you asked about, we can't wait for it. Don't wait till it's broken to fix it, I guess is one way of saying it. And so I want to give you an example of like something that changed my life. And I just want you to experience, and I can give you two really. And they start in my head and then they come out in my living and in my life. The first one I'll share was when I started to notice I was holding my breath and wanting to be perfect and really struggling in motherhood when I really let go of perfect and I canceled the goal of getting it right and being right. Can you see where my mindset of good girl, do good, be good girl, get it right, led me right into being thinking as a mom that I needed to just nail it to the wall, you know, because I love them so much and I want to be great. I love them so much. So I would cancel the goal when I noticed, and again, I told you, this was 5 years into motherhood that I noticed, wow, you're just always going forward and you're never there. Like you're literally always going for the next great thing. So you're never there. You're never arriving, Suzanne. It's a day late, dollar short, constantly. How is that working for you? And I felt like it's not. So I was like, okay, what do I do about that? How do I change that? So all I did was look for the moments where I could feel in my body when I was showing up and I felt like a not enough or day late, dollar short, what it felt like in my body. And I would just ask you right now to take a deep breath and ask yourself, what does it feel like in my body when I'm feeling not enough? What does it feel like in my body when I'm feeling not gentle or compassionate, when I'm judging myself and I don't have space for me? What does that feel like? For me in my body, it felt like this, and I'm vibrating my hand and it was up in my chest and I could also feel it in my gut, but it was like the vibration. And so what I looked for was a physical feeling in my body. And when I felt that body feeling, do you know what I did? I didn't change anything. The first thing I did was I breathed in the words, I love myself. And I breathed out, I am enough. And that practice changed my life. And it wasn't a day. You know, it wasn't like I read this quote on Instagram that said I'm enough and I was like, yeah. It was really like living it and waiting for the next time where I wasn't. And your body will tell you when you're not. Your body will tell you when it thinks you're not. Wait for that moment and breathe it in. That's the healing.
You know, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna, well, please share and then I'll share another idea there.
You know, it's so interesting because we're both coming from such a physical background, you know, me as a body worker and you as a physical therapist. And also the nervous system goes first through the body. And I think it's such an important thing that you just shared. Can we catch these first insecurities or these first emotional manifestation, they first show up in the body, right, as a sensation. If we can fine-tune it in there, we got it. Because we're not yet have like really lost our brain capacity to really go there, but we can stay in that feeling of like, okay, for me it's like a more an anxious or like, oh, my kid is not going to turn out right, that anxiety. So for me it's more that one where, you know, that's the pre-step before I start yelling, right? So if I catch myself there, notice, you oh,
yourself holding your breath.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, and also, you know, you bring in the idea of catching a thought. So you could, my thought was I'm not enough. And your thought is worry and fear and anxiety. So you can catch your pattern. And that's the truth here, guys, that you're hearing. You can catch it. And if you notice when the thought pattern is happening and correlate it to your physical experience in the moment, now you've caught the embodied experience of that thought pattern.
And okay? Then we have a choice. In that yes. moment, there is a choice because we're not yelling yet or we're not slamming a door yet.
Because and even if you just yelled and slammed the door, guess what? There is only this moment. So your point of personal power isn't yesterday or a minute ago. It's right now. So, you know, I'm like hooping up and arms up and, you know, I don't know. It's just exciting to me. That's joyful to me.
It's empowering. It's really so empowering because most of the time what parenting is, it's not empowering when we just beat ourselves up, right? And right. if we can have that little insight, which is a big insight, and start working, as you said, on that bite size, it's amazing what happens.
That's what I say, the joy and the ease. Mm. That was my big aha moment sitting on the floor teaching baby massage. I was like, freedom to cuss, like this shit is easy and it's joyful. And I'm watching huge shifts and generational pattern shift and empowerment. And I'm seeing all the science, everything I've learned, I'm watching it happen. And like, we don't have to pontificate and overanalyze. Like, it can be easy. It can be natural. It can be relational. And it can unfold. And I believe when you look at attachment, I believe that our children are rooting for us and nature is rooting for us. And it is more natural and unfolding than we give it credit for. We think, at least I did, like I have to make this happen. Like I'm going to be good parent and create secure attachment. And the truth is, it's by design, it's nature's design for us. And we really can rest into the knowledge that we're enough, our children are too. It might be confusing, chaotic, and crazy at times. And we can trust the process, the journey. We can really focus our attention more on noticing, naming, feeling, and healing rather than orchestrating. And I can promise you, the attachment we're looking for and the secure attachment and the love and the trust and the safe feelings, they're there. They will follow. And what I know is your children will generate them. You are not on the hook for all of this. Your children are working so beautifully by nature to create you as an engaged, powerful, present parent.
Yes. You know, that what you said, it's always right now in the moment where we have that opportunity to change. That for me goes with so many things. Also, one of the things is like after you have perhaps had one of your not so perfect parenting moments, you know, where you're like, oh my God, you know, we all have them, no matter how well trained we are, right? What are we doing then? For me, the repair is always so important, like where I can show up and go back and show up with like, yeah, you know, I didn't want to approach it like this and I was too hectic or I was too loud or whatever. And I apologize or whatever it is, just showing up real. And I noticed, you know, when you said we parent have often such a worry of like, we're so out of control. So we try to control. And I notice it's not really working. If I try to control, I lose control. If I'm starting to connect, there is a mutual creating between my son and me of what it means to raise a kid.
Yes, that's fascinating. I think what you're sharing is kind of universally experienced, but from a brain science, it's on point as well. If you think about it, when we seek to have control over another human, generally we're feeling threatened at some level. And so we would move to a more fundamental, rudimentary, or base part of our brain. That's fight, flight, or freeze, the brainstem, which is literally shared by the dinosaurs and the lizards and ourselves, okay? So this is not our highest human potential for compassion, empathy, and brilliance, right? Or like transcendence or human love and connection. False, right? It is rudimentary. I want to live. You're not going to kill me. I'm going to survive. So if you think about the choices we make from that part of our brain, they're fascinating. I don't want to judge them because they do keep us alive. Survival is important. And so my practice is not to judge myself if I'm noticing I'm operating out of that defensive place. It's just to notice and name it and feel it and heal it. So that is the red brain, we call it, the fight, flight, or freeze. And so seeking connection, though, what part of our brain are we in when we're in the mindset of love? I would propose that it's the highest, most evolved potential in the human person for transcendence, for interconnectedness. And so the genius of you and your child show up in that moment when I'm creative. Like when I showed up at the TV and I got curious about what are you watching, and I pause and I breathe and I notice, where am I in my body? Instead of just bowling in there and overpowering you, sure, we're going to feel more connected. And my child's going to have an experience of feeling respected in the world and powerful. So it's really that power to connect. So one, I would actually say this phrase was responsible for the formation of Generation Mindful. It was a phrase that I said again and again and again in all of my classes, live and online, everywhere. And this one mom shared with me a absolutely transformational experience she had, where she moved from hitting, literally spanking her child, to choosing to get down low and look her little toddler boy in the eye and take a breath and get curious about what was going on in the moment. Like that shift in her brain, she experienced, and she brought it to class and she shared it. There was not a dry eye in the class because we felt her. What happened that she was able to shift? I mean, I could see the generational healing just in her sharing that moment that she had the night before. And she shared with me, I heard you in my head, Suzanne. I kept hearing, connect before you correct. Connect before you correct. She just kept saying it over and over and over. And I was a puddle. I was in tears. I had had this experience myself and I'd witnessed it time and again. But that moment, she even said to me, what just happened? Why did that happen? How do I make it happen again? So she was the trigger. She was the cause of Generation Mindful. Because I said to her, I don't know, but I'm going to figure it out. And I'll keep you posted. And I went home and I got curious and I said, what is happening? I've seen this. I know this. This moment has happened again and again. I've seen it in decades, decades and decades. But this moment empowered me to say, I'm tired of only impacting 30 families a weekend. I think I want to be a part of this technology mainstreaming around the world and raising a generation through conscious strategies. And I got real frustrated with my own personal power and impact. And it was this mom, and I went home and I worked it out and I thought it was tangible for her. It was her mindset. She could grab onto those words. They were as real as a wall or a stone in her hand. She could feel it. She could hold on to it in that hard moment. So literally, that's why we launched the Peacemaker cards, the mantra cards that launched all of Generation Mindful. It was a deck of mindsets. It was like, if we can mainstream concepts like mistakes help me learn and grow, and I am love, and I learn and grow every day, yet I am perfect today, right now, just the way I am. If we can mainstream mindsets, then the actions we're looking for, the moments, they're going to take care of themselves, just like this mom showed me.
Yeah, you know, and I would say what we have been talking about here is really not just if you have little kids. It really is the same thing when you have teens. It's about that connection before you correct. And again, as you said, it's the whole nervous system and the receptivity shifts, right? When we actually connect. And hey, even for partners, we all have the same nervous system. We don't all have the same tools, but we have all the same nervous system. And so when we start to learn how to drive that and take advantage of the wiring that we have and start wire it in a different way, we can, it's getting a little easier. And for everybody, the outcome is just much more joyful. And as you said, with joy and ease, like, who would say that as a parent, especially with four kids, twins? What are they now? 13, you said?
Yes, twins that are in eighth grade, boy, girl, twins. And we actually, on my journey, we conceived five. So I consider them my children. They're in heaven, right? Or wherever you believe the souls are. And so I'm really a mother of nine.
Wow.
And that's part of my journey, right? As my 23-year-old, my 21-year-old, my five, I consider them my angels. I call them my twinkles. And then my two that are 13, they're all part of my motherhood journey. And I actively nurture, love, mother the four, and they love me. And now I get to be in this conscious parenting relationship with them. And it only gets better. I meet so many parents that with the littles and they're worried about them getting bigger and, oh no, they're going to grow up. And I just tell them my experiences, it gets better, better and better and better. It really, truly is so amazing to be in relationship with these souls. And it's not easy. I mean, we've had some real hard curveballs with mental health, gender fluidity, just all the things. It's all happening at the Tucker House. I went through conscious uncoupling, as you could call it, or a conscious divorce 3 years ago. I just want your listeners to feel me out there that it's not perfect over here at my house, but I don't have a goal for that anymore. So it makes it a lot more joyful. And there's a lot more joy and ease.
More energy flowing because you're going with the, as you said, not even challenges, but opportunities to grow. It's again, it's that refraining of like, okay, I have a difficult moment with my child. It can be so precious for the both of us to grow. Do we have that mindset? Or am I going to be like, who is the stronger here? You know, like,
right, both the power struggle.
The power struggle.
Especially I raised a super powerful, strong-willed second child. Morgan was my catalyst for so much growth. And strong-willed kiddos are a catalyst for us to really grow. And so wherever your child is, and I would say cooperative children, we just don't know it, but they're really challenging us to grow because we can so easily take their voice and their power, and they can show up not knowing the power they are in the world. That would be little Susanne over here. I was so easy to raise. And yet there were so many complicated questions and thoughts going on in my mind. And I almost want to invite the educators out there. It's not the squeaky wheels that we want to like, quote, if not that we want to worry, but that we want to really attune to. It's those ones that are really flying under the radar that I want to just hug and hold up and put a highlighter on and bring our resources, our school resources and our family resources to those kiddos. And maybe it's because I was one of them. But I want you to know the squeaky wheel gets the oil. The one out there who's quiet and just under the radar is the one that I believe conscious child rearing can really transform greatest, truly.
And that awareness, first of all, that tuning in can show us, can make us aware of all of them, right? I mean, the educators, yeah, the educators, you know, they have really, I look up to them. It's such an such a hard job, especially with the resources we have in schools and the expectations on them. So I think all these tools you have shared so nicely with us, you know, it's really important also for teachers of like, yeah. Okay, self-care, that taking a breath. And then when we can create that what you shared, that connection in the classrooms, how amazing is that? And then the kids feel seen, right?
They are also intrinsically motivated for cooperation and listening, which is like what we want. We want the executive functioning skills. We can't beat them into it. We can't want them enough for them. We can't force them through discipline, the type of like overpowering punishment. What we can do is involve them, empower them, lead and guide them, model for them, and really wire for intrinsic motivation in the way we manage classroom unwanted behaviors, disruptions. We can start to embrace them as teaching moments. And that's what we've done. We have something called the Classroom Time and Toolkit. And this is really the focus of Generation Mindful. After 7 years of going direct to consumer, we are now really focusing on reaching marginalized populations, children and families that might never come on our website. How do we support you? We work with institutions, nonprofits, and schools. So our focus is every child, every heart, every home, every classroom. So I'm most excited about the opportunity to partner with our family support nonprofits, YMCAs, the boys and the girls clubs and the after school programs, and even the public and private schools, and getting these in the preschool classrooms. Little 2, 3, 4, 5s is our favorite area to go. And we've got the tools and the lesson plans and the resources and the community and the support, which I think is everything.
Yeah, it's amazing. You have everything on your website, and you know, it's like so many options there too to play around with all these tools you're sharing and make it tangible and playful and fun. You know,
love what you're doing. You're doing the mindfulness in the classrooms and working with the middle schoolers. And there is not an age that we can't start. I just want everyone to know. It's just that we've chosen the earlier because the more formative, right, in the nervous system. And the truth is the human brain is plastic and we can go wherever we are. Wherever we are, there we are. And that's where we go. The same tools will work. It's just that the real point of power that we have as a community right now is healing the adult who's connecting with the young child. That intergenerational connection for me is really exciting in terms of our point of power.
Right, where we go with it. Yeah, for sure. It's, you know, and I work pre-K all the way up to middle school in the schools. And it is the reason why I'm in the schools is because teaching parenting courses was nice, but it's the people who already know, they show up. And it's like, you know, as you said, the kids who need it the most and the teachers. I mean, you know, I mean, really, it's being a teacher is so demanding, and having tools as a teacher to not burn out is essential as well, because if teachers are not burned out, the kids are better off too.
Yes. We are losing so many talented teachers to early retirement and burnout. They're leaving the profession.
Yep.
I just want everyone to know out there that it's not just in your mind. The research I'm seeing is 89% rise in unwanted behaviors in the public and private school classrooms from the NCES, I believe it was. And I can even share that article with you if it would help to link it in the show notes. 89% rise in unwanted behaviors in the classroom after COVID. That's the experience when educators have been surveyed. Right. And that means missed school time, lost learning, increased discipline, even acting out and risk of the where the educator is actually feeling threatened. This is at a rise.
It's intense in the school systems for sure. And we have the research to actually do start and change things.
So We are just coming to the end of the show. Thank you so much for joining us, Suzanne Tucker, and sharing out your wisdom with us. You can get in touch with Suzanne Tucker through her website, genmindful.com. You spell this genmindful.com. This is full of free resources. You can check out the classes and tools. You can also sign up for the free newsletter. Also, a big shout out and thank you to Julian Jackson for editing. And catch you next time on Mindful Mud.
This has been a K-Mud podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.